Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here, as I said this morning. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's always a mistake to clap the speaker beforehand, though. I always reckon you ought to wait till afterwards to see if he deserves it. So I'm going to talk about the dairy industry, and I hope that's of interest to all you beef cattle breeders. I think there's some lessons to be learnt there, because they've been fortunate to have much better data available to them in this genomics field than we've had in beef cattle. This is just a repeat of this morning, if you were at my talk there. To remind you, we've got a discovery population. I don't know whether I can get this to work. We've got a discovery population, that's animals that have got DNA genotypes and they've got phenotypes. We use them to derive a prediction equation. We have selection candidates who we genotype, and we combine their genotypes with this prediction equation to get what I'm calling a marker breeding value, MBV. These selection candidates might also have some pedigree information or some phenotypes. That gets converted into an ordinary, I've got EBV, you're used to EPDs, and these two get combined to give us a genomic EPD, or in my language, EBV. Estimated breeding values are just twice EPDs. All the major dairy countries in the world are now implementing genomic selection. I was at an Interbull meeting in Sweden early this year, and it was just staggering. Every representative from every country got up one after the other and said, yes, we've genotyped X thousand bulls and we're releasing genomic breeding values in 2010, or some story like that. Why is this happening? Because it promises to double the rate of genetic improvement in dairy cattle. But the key to that is decreasing the generation interval. And you have to sort of take this on board as how to get the benefits out of genomic selection. You've got to be prepared to decrease the generation interval. For the scientists in the room, this is just a very back-of-the-envelope calculation to justify the claim that you can double the rate of progress. In a traditional, well, this is the textbook formula. I is the intensity of selection, R is the accuracy, M for males, F for females, L is the generation lengths. So one way to do it in dairy cattle is that you use as young a heifers as you can and you mate them to progeny tested bulls. So the bulls are very highly selected, they're highly accurate, and there's no selection in the female side at all. Generation length is minimised on the female side, and it's about 6 years on the male side. So you end up at 0.2 genetic standard deviations per year from a classical progeny testing program. And you can fiddle around with this design, but you'll always end up with something around about that number. With genomic selection, I've assumed here an accuracy of only 0.6. And already we're beyond that. We're past 0.6. But we've got still intense selection in the bull calves. We could make it even more intense using genomics, because we don't have to progeny test, which limits the number of bulls you can select from. We select the best half of the heifers, the same accuracy, and we get the generation interval down to 2 years on both pathways. And when you do the sums, you double the rate of genetic progress. So that's a huge change. Greatly faster progress, but with a breeding program that's dramatically different to what we're used to. You've really got to reduce that generation interval to take advantage of this genomic selection. It's not so dramatic in beef, but the same thing will apply. Because you can make your selection decision when the calf is born, the sooner you can breed from him or her, the better off you'll be. How will these genomic EPDs be used in the dairy industry? Well, the first thing is to select young bulls to progeny test. You've got all these bull calves. Traditionally, they're selected on pedigree. Now the breeding companies can select them on the DNA and decide which ones to progeny test. You can select young bulls as bulls to breed cows. BC means bulls to breed cows. If you've got these young bulls that you've evaluated using the DNA, why not sell the semen to dairy farmers? That's already happening. If these young bulls are so good, why not use them to breed the next generation of young bulls? If it isn't already happening, it will be very soon. You could select your best cows as dams of young bulls. Again, the really progressive breeders will be into that the second that the service is offered to them. What about just selecting cows to breed cows? Again, within a stud sector, it'll get used as soon as it's available. You could select which heifers to keep. You've got perhaps more heifers than you need for replacements. If the test was cheap enough, you'd run it across the heifers and decide which ones to keep. Again, how cheap would it have to be in the beef industry in order to be used for deciding which of your heifers to keep as replacements? It's probably cheaper than it currently would cost, but in the future, hopefully, the test is cheap enough that everybody uses it for that. You might select which heifers go into which production system. This is in the dairy industry in Australia. It might be which heifers are suited to a high grain feeding system and which are suited to a pasture only system. But I'm sure you could think of your own beef cattle example of sorting animals, much the way Cargill are already doing within the feedlot. You could do the same sort of thing on farm as well. Possibly you could predict which cows, and this is dairy of course, so just fill in steers for beef as well, which cows are susceptible to particular diseases, and have a little warning flag come up to watch those cows. So it'd be an assistance in management. Already, of course, the DNA can be used to establish pedigree, so you don't have to mother up calves. The sale price of the animal or its products could be determined by the results of a DNA profile. In Australia, some of the markers that affect tenderness are being included in the official meat grading system. And so, logically, that will then affect the price of the meat, and that'll feed back eventually to the price of the animals. And, of course, it's already being used for tracing animals and their products. It's the ideal way to trace a lump of meat back to which cow or steer it came from. So the point I'm trying to make here, I think, is that the list of uses for this is going to grow, and it'll be worth using even at a commercial level in the dairy industry, I believe, and probably even in the beef industry, because you get multiple uses for the same bit of data. You can imagine a system. You only have to do the DNA typing once, so you do it on calves, and that result just travels with the animal as it gets transferred from one owner to the next throughout the rest of its life. You don't have to do it over and over again. You might do it just to get the pedigree so you don't have to mother up, and you get all of these other things as a byproduct. So I'm going to talk a bit about the discovery population, validation population, accuracy, and the advantages of having a single system of EPDs. So in most dairy experiments that have been done, including ours, the animals that we've used in the discovery population have been progeny-tested bulls, AI bulls. And this means that we've got a trait, a progeny average on those bulls that's comparable with a heritability of about 0.8. So the data on individual bulls is a more accurate guide to their breeding value than a raw phenotype, an individual performance record. The effect of that is that you need less animals. The number of animals needed is proportional to somewhere between 1 over heritability and 1 minus heritability over heritability. I won't defend why I can't work out which is the right answer. It's somewhere in between. So for a trait with a heritability of 0.3, a progeny-tested bull is worth about 3 to 9 times as much as an individual record. But for a lowly heritable trait, it's even more than that. 8 to 36 times I've got there. So for any sort of trait, you need a lot more records if you've got individual animals than if you've got progeny-tested sires as your data points. And it's particularly bad for lowly heritable traits. Despite that, I can't see any alternative but to using individual records, because we're going to run out of progeny-tested bulls, and the progeny-tested bulls aren't tested for all the traits that we want. But you've got to recognise that there's an efficiency in using progeny-tested bulls while you can, and when you have to move on to individual animals, you've just got to scale up your numbers. I'll talk a bit about our results in dairy traits, and I want to acknowledge the people who did all the work. They're my colleagues at DPI in Melbourne. It seems to me that haplotypes give a clearer picture than single SNPs in looking at the results of these genome-wide association studies. Some of the genes segregate in only one breed. That, when I say genes, I mean the genes that are actually influencing the trait. The ones we can't see, we just have to infer them from the SNP data. And some genes segregate in only one sample from a breed. I've got another acknowledgement here of the people at USDA who helped us with the genotyping. Not quite sure what's... It looks like something's happened to my slides. I know what's happened. The pictures that I put in were too big and when I emailed them, they didn't work. So forgive me, I've got two slides here which are supposed to illustrate that we get cleaner results with haplotype data than with individual SNP data. The individual SNP data, it bounces around all over the place. With the haplotype data, I think you can see that there are quite a number of places where there's a gene actually influencing that trait, but it's not just spread everywhere. And we can clearly see places where there's a gene that's affecting the trait in Holsteins, and in Jerseys there's just nothing. But sometimes we can see a gene that's affecting the trait in one lot of Holsteins, and there's nothing there at all, no signal in another lot of Holsteins. And my hypothesis is that quite often the gene that is influencing the trait has got one rare allele. And so the frequency of that rare allele bounces around considerably from one sample of animals to another. If if in a particular year they used a sire of sons who was segregating for that particular gene, then you see it segregating in the data. But if they didn't use a sire of sons that was segregating, it's so rare in the data, you just miss it completely. So now some results on the validation and accuracy, particularly including multiple breeds. So what we did, we had Holsteins and Jerseys. Our discovery population was bulls born before 2004, and our validation population was bulls born after 2004. This was how we split the data. It sort of makes sense because you want to apply the prediction equation to younger animals than what you use to derive the prediction equation. We'd have liked to have had much bigger numbers, but we're only poor Australians and we ran out of money. This is a relationship matrix where we've got the Holstein reference or discovery population, and then the Jersey discovery, the Holstein validation, and the Jersey validation. And so obviously you can see the Holsteins are all related to each other and the Jerseys are related to each other. This is a relationship matrix computed from the SNP data, not from the pedigrees at all. And it shows all sorts of interesting things. It shows the lack of relationship between Holsteins and Jerseys, as you would expect. If you look carefully, you can see that there's more red flecking in the Jerseys than in the Holsteins, because the Jerseys are more inbred than the Holsteins are. You might even be able to see that there's very few red flecks in these off-diagonal blocks. So there's not a lot of high relationships between the Holsteins in the discovery population and the Holsteins in the reference population, in the validation population. And that's what you want, because you don't want a prediction equation that only works for highly related animals. So this is where we developed the prediction equation in Holsteins, the correlation with their progeny test result in Holsteins, and the correlation with the progeny test in Jerseys. So we discovered it in Holsteins and tested it in Holsteins, it worked. If we tested it in Jerseys, it didn't work at all. The reverse here, if we discovered it in Jerseys, it worked. If we discovered it in Jerseys and tested it in Holsteins, it didn't work at all. But we could also use both discovery populations together, and then it worked in both breeds. So at least for two breeds, it was possible to get a prediction equation that worked for both of them, provided you actually derived the prediction equation from a discovery set that had both breeds. I think it's going to get harder and harder as you try and add a third and a fourth breed to that list, but at least for two we could get it to work. We tried a whole bunch of different methods. We tried a BLUP method and a Bayes method that allows some genes to have big effects and some genes to have no effect. And for milk protein yield, it didn't make any difference at all. For fat percentage, the Bayes method did work better. And that's hardly surprising, because we know that there's one gene in fat percentage that has a really big effect, DGAT. And so if there are genes of really big effect there, then it's better to use these Bayesian methods that take advantage of that fact. We calculated from the BLUP prediction equations the theoretical reliability of the results, or the theoretical accuracy in this case. And then we actually got an empirical accuracy by looking at the correlation between the prediction and the result of the progeny test. And it seems to have worked pretty well. This is what the theory said we should have got, and this is the actual realised correlation when we tested it in a new population. And so the method seems to be working reasonably well. And that would be a big advantage, because it would mean that you weren't dependent upon going and getting a new validation set every time you updated the prediction equation. You've seen this graph already. The number of animals that you need, given that this prediction stuff really does work, we can now say how many animals you need in order to reach a given level of accuracy. And unfortunately, the answer is lots. 4,000 animals to get an accuracy around about 0.5. Some of the statistics put up this morning were more optimistic than that, and I hope that they're right. But I'm just sort of sounding a note of caution, I think, is that these are the sort of numbers that we see you need in order to get that level of accuracy. Ignore that spot there. This is just to test whether our predictions of accuracy stack up with real data. And the real data in this case is not ours, but from USDA and their accuracy in prediction of their total merit index. And the prediction line seems to work pretty well. We're more or less correctly predicting the level of accuracy that they observe. So what about in beef cattle? The accuracy achieved by most people in beef cattle is lower than in dairy cattle. And the reasons for that are obvious, I think. One is that a lot of us don't have that many progeny-tested sires, and so we're using phenotypes, which are individual records of performance on individual animals like steers. And so already that means we've got a much less accurate measure of genetic merit to use in our prediction. Generally, we've got smaller number of animals in our experiments. If I go back, this last spot in the USDA is up to almost 7,000 bulls. So there's not many of us that have got 7,000 progeny tested bulls within a breed in beef cattle. And of course, for most of us, we've got multiple breeds that we're interested in. Although perhaps in America, if it works in Angus, that's good enough. But certainly for us, it's not. We need something that works across multiple breeds. So how are we going to get the accuracy in beef cattle up? Well, it's simple. There's no rocket science. We need more cattle with phenotypes and genotypes. We need a bigger discovery set. We should use progeny-tested sires if we've got them available. We need a multiple breed discovery if that's the way we're going to use it, or alternatively, we just accept the fact that we're only going to use it in Angus. We probably need better statistical methods to try and take better account of these relatively rare genes that influence some data sets but not others. We need a larger number of SNPs if we're going to go across breed. If you want to just do it within breed, 50,000 is ample, but if you want to do it across breed, it's not. What about the implementation? Well, it's basically simple, I think. You'll tell me that, of course, there are lots of practical headaches, but at least in concept, it's easy. If you're a cattle owner, you need a tissue sample. Nasal swab sounds like a pretty good idea to me, if that gives you enough DNA. You send it to the laboratory, they produce the DNA genotypes, They send these to a genetic evaluation centre. They produce EPDs, and that goes back to the cattle owner. Now, this is the dairy model, so that the genetic evaluation centre is actually getting raw genotypes. In the beef model, these would be converted into MBVs by the DNA company, and the MBVs would go to the genetic evaluation centre. So here's my picture again, showing that really this is just another source of data that's got to be fed into the calculation of EPDs. If you view it that way, then it tends to lead you to an old-fashioned socialistic way of doing business. Now, I know that that's a dirty word in America, but America, as well as everywhere else, has been very socialistic about genetic evaluation systems in the past. We've recognised that if we put all of our data together, we get better EPDs than if we try and do it within our own herd. So, really, why not apply the same rules to the use of the DNA data? The answer is that companies have invested in getting this data and the prediction equations, and they want to get a profit from all the money that they've invested. And that's fair enough. But if you just said as an industry, how would we get the most accurate EPDs, it'd be by putting all the data together and using it to estimate the best prediction equation. Certainly what we want, I believe, is a single system of EPDs. The cattle industry has had a very favourable situation where you've been able to compare animals from different sources on the same scale, because people have published EPDs across the whole population. This is very dramatic in dairy cattle, where Interbull publishes rankings for all the bulls in the world, and a dairy farmer in Australia can look up and compare bulls that are available from France or from Holland or from America or from Australia. That's quite an amazing thing when you think about it, but why would we want to give that away? As people who purchase bulls or purchase semen, that's exactly the system that we want, one where we can look up an independently calculated EPD that compares all of the animals available to us. At the moment, the traditional EPDs are still being calculated and then merged with the MBVs. But I reckon the best way to do the calculations in the future will be to run the whole EPD system off DNA genotypes. It'll just become standard practice in the dairy industry, at least, that all animals have got DNA. And if they don't have, we'll infer them from their relatives and then use that. So I think we're going to look at a whole different way of doing genetic evaluations, a method that's completely driven off DNA genotypes, rather than having them as a sort of an add-on. Of course, this can only happen if the raw data is available to the people who do the genetic evaluations. In the dairy industry, as I've suggested, the raw genotypes are becoming available to the genetic evaluation system rather than being computed into MBVs first. However, the use of the system is restricted in the US and probably in every other country as well. In the US, it's only the AI companies that invested in the discovery experiment which are allowed to use the system for bulls. Again, I can understand why that is. They've invested money in it and they want to get a return on that investment. But it would be a great shame if this caused the breakdown of this system that we've got of having only a single set of EPDs. We really don't want to force people who are competitors in the market to invent a new EPD system because they're shut out of the official one. If, for example, the Dutch want to sell semen in US, but they can't get access to the USDA genomic evaluation system, I don't know what they'll do. Maybe they'll just invent their own genomic EPDs and sell semen on the basis of that. That's a completely legitimate thing to do, but it doesn't really help American dairy farmers, because now they've got two different systems of EPDs and they can't compare from one to the other. So we don't want to force people to circumvent the system, and I think we should try and make the system as open as possible so that everybody can get access to it. So in summary, all the major dairy companies are implementing genomic selection. They'll use it to reduce generation intervals and double genetic progress. It'll be the biggest change in the industry since the introduction of EPDs. You need a large discovery population, and it seems like we're pretty close to being able to predict the accuracy of these MBVs from the bluff method of calculation and the bluff equations that you get. Genomic selection is more accurate in the dairy industry than in the beef industry at present, because the beef industry has got fewer animals, they're not progeny tested, and we've got multiple breeds that we want to work across. The system to deliver genomic EPDs in the dairy industry is different to beef, because the raw genotypes are going to be stored in the genetic evaluation centre. A single EPD system is of benefit to cattle breeders, and I believe an open system where we maintain that single EPD will be of most value to the industry. Thank you.